This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I will say that this morning was quite amazing. You know, this is a wonderful thing about Florida, and especially when you live, I think living on the West Coast is much better than on the East Coast, because not only do we get wonderful sunsets, of course, this morning we had a glorious, glorious dawn. Everything, the sky was pink, and it was so beautiful. And then suddenly just this big bolt of lightning came. It was really quite amazing. And that's a beautiful thing about living here. You have such an amazing, amazing opportunity to see beautiful skies all year round. So I just want to say to everybody, you know, as I said, this is a perfect place for writers to write. And if you are in the area already, you're writing, great. If you're stuck up somewhere up north in one of these tall, high-rise apartment buildings in New York or Chicago or somewhere, and you are afraid to use the elevators, this might be a good time to come down to Florida for a three-month vacation. Rentals aren't too bad here now. You know, usually our rentals are less in the summertime, but because I was talking to a friend who has some rental property, and she said, you know, this is the time to come down. So if you're stuck up there and you don't want to go up and down in elevators, check it out, and we'll welcome you here in Florida. And you know, you have your own we have stairs, and you don't have to get in elevators with a bunch of people. Anyway, I have today, I don't know. You know, it's one of those days where I don't know if I even have a guest. I am waiting to hear. This is one of the things that happens here with the whole everything. Things are a little bit confused, partly because of the COVID. I have so many of the publicists that I work with, of course, are in New York City. Generally speaking, they are in New York City, but like me, many of them are broadcasting either from home or secret locations, or some of them actually have gone off to the countryside to their parents' homes that don't have as great, you know, an internet connection. So I might be talking to them and their whole internet goes down. So I don't know today. I might have some really wonderful guests, a mother and daughter team who have written, my goodness, their books are bestsellers. And so we'll see if they call in today, if they eventually got all the messages that I've been going back and forth with their publicist. And, you know, I look forward to talking to them. And it's PC and Kristen Cast, and they have written a book called Found. You probably have, if you look at the New York Times bestselling list, you've seen them on there. I think their books have been there now for at least 3 years. They're zombie books. You know, I have to become an aficionado of zombies, because, you know, if you're looking at any of those streaming videos, I think something like 30% of them must be zombie movies. And that if, as we are all getting desperate for something to watch, I like zombies, all right. You know, it's not, but they're not my favorite. And so I was happy when I've had a few writers who have done really great zombie books. And once you get into them, if you've not ever read them, they're interesting. And this particular series, it's called House of Night series, and the casts have done a great job with it, and they've really developed a sort of a different world. And so If they get on, they'll get on and we'll talk about it. But if not, I want to talk about, this is really exciting. I'm going to have on Thursday Richard Castle. Well, not Richard Castle, the actor, but the real writer, Tom Straw, who wrote the Richard Castle books for the Richard Castle character. And Tom is going to be on. And so I will get to talk about his books, and we'll get to talk about what it's like to pick up a character. Oh, hold on. I don't have a number for them. Do I? Just a minute, Ed? I hope not. That's not the right number. I'm sorry. Oh, boy. Yes, I was going to, we're waiting for a call. They said 1110. But we'll see. That number I have, it doesn't work, Ed. I tried it earlier because I wanted to get this all organized today. So we'll see. If they call in, they'll call in. If not, we'll just talk for the entire time. But for me to be able to talk to Tom Straw, who I really, of course, anybody who is a fan of the Castle series, and I certainly am, I think it's a great series. And it was so, I really enjoyed when the series first started, and then later on the books came out, the books that Richard Castle was supposed to have written. And, sometimes those things don't work. But in this case, Tom Straw is just such a great author. And he really got into the character of Castle and wrote the books with that sort of vim and vigor that we expect from Richard Castle. And I'm so happy that he's going to be on the program because, you know, sometimes you just get a kick out of somebody. And I get a kick out of those books, and I think he's a great guy. And so Larry Block, who is the mystery writer of America Grandmaster, arranged the interview, and I am so happy that I will be able to have him on Thursday, and I'm going to try to keep him on most of the program. But at the end of the program, I'm going to have an author who's going to talk about something that everybody needs to know about, and this is about how to protect your credit rating during this pandemic, because, many people are late in paying their bills. Many people are, everything's happening. You're paying part of your bills. You're not paying all of your bills. And the credit companies can really do, they can do a job on all of us. So you have to really not understand now the dynamics of it. Make sure that you protect your credit. So he's going to be on the author of a book about protecting your credit during the COVID epidemic. Pandemic or whatever it is, will be on and give us some good advice, because it's something like one more thing we need to worry about. So I'm looking forward to that. Then next week, this is really fantastic. Again, I just get so lucky. I'm going to have Owen King on next Tuesday. Now, Owen King is Stephen King's son. And, of course, he learned a lot from his father. And he is such a good writer. And sometimes this happens, in this case, the mother and daughter team that I'm going to be talking to today, they've worked together. And they've written together a series, a best-selling series. But it's always difficult when you're following in the footsteps of a parent and you don't know if you're going to be as famous it's pretty hard to be more famous than Stephen King. But Owen is an excellent writer. And when I first read his book, and I read his book long time before, I didn't even realize who he was. And it is, it's just so good. And he's such a fine writer. So I'm really looking forward to having him on next Tuesday. And that's Owen King. So you mark your calendar both for Thursday for Tom Straw, and then next Tuesday, Owen King. And then on August 4th, I have, this is really wonderful. I have Carolyn Hart coming back. She was one of my very first guest, and I am so thrilled that she's going to be coming back. She's the author of a series called Death on Demand, and just a wonderful series where she has, over the years, as she wrote this series, and it's set in a bookshop, in a bookstore, and through this series, she managed to introduce readers to many, many authors that they might not have heard about simply by using those books in her bookstore. And so it's fascinating how she did it, and so many authors owe her a debt of gratitude because they were discovered by her readers. And I'm really looking forward to talking to her about that. So I have her coming on, and it's quite a few interesting people. I've also got, I'm going to be having Peter Riva back on because he was so wonderful. And also, I'm looking forward, I'm just waiting for a date to have Andrew Grant, who is now going to be Andrew Child, with his brother, of course, Lee Child, whose real name is Jim Grant. So it's a thing, and I'm looking forward to getting the advanced copy of their book. This is going to be fun. One of the, I mean, always, you know, when I first started the program, now, as I've mentioned, I've read over 10,000 books. Well, at that point when I started the program, I've read more, a lot more since. But I used to buy books. Let's put it this way. I bought, of course, if I could find antique books, I bought antique books. But I was one of those people who bought, you know, I needed the book the day it came out. And so I had tons and tons of books like that over the years that I bought. And my husband, as the years progressed, the prices increased. He said, well, can't you wait, you know, until the paperback? But I prefer, of course, hardback books. And so I spent a lot of money. And that was one of the advantages of starting this radio program. I get all these books free. And the best part is that I get them months in advance. So I know what's happening to a character long time before anybody else. And it's always such a kick. I just get such a kick out of it. So that I know the story, and I don't do any spoilers. So, okay, I think I have my call in. Okay, this is exciting. You know, I need zombies. We need zombies, I guess. I don't know. People have found some kind of a great something in zombies. And I just, it's just so funny. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. And it's a mother and daughter team. And I love mother and daughter teams, you know, that they work together and that they produce together. And so it's and they love to talk together. So I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, PC Cast and Kristen Cast. And we're going to be talking about Found, which is, for many people, a very sad day because it's the last of the House of Night books. Hi.
Hi.
Okay, I have both of you on, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't have to worry about you guys talking because I understand you're chatters. You're real big chatters. You love to talk.
We do. This isn't our first time we've done this. So we decided a long time ago to just enjoy ourselves.
Well, that's wonderful. And, you know, I know for your fans, in many ways, it's like a heartbreaking day. Because many of your fans, I was talking to one of them, and she reads your book in one day. I mean, she like gets your book,
yes,
and she reads it in one day. And now she said, what am I going to do?
Yes, that, you know, I wish it took one day to write them. Uh-huh. It's always so crazy. You know, it takes all these months to write it, and then the fans are like, they gobble it in like 24 hours, and they're like, okay, what's next? I'm still writing, okay?
I know, but it must make you feel really good when they say that. It's really such a sort of tribute to you that they really can't put it down.
Yeah.
It's
exciting.
We love our readers.
Yeah.
Now, and of course, it's sad that you're not able to do your tours, because I know that they are always successful because, you know, it's just the fans like to see you.
Oh, we love touring.
I know, touring. But it makes it feel like it's not, the end isn't really real, because whenever we finished the original House of Night series back in 2014, in 2014, you know, we knew that it was coming out, but you're always on to the next thing at the end of another thing. So it didn't feel like the absolute end of the original House of Night series until we saw all of our readers. And we were just crying at
oh God, every stop, man.
Yes,
the end of that, we were like snot crying at the end. It was just, and so we knew that would happen this time too, because of course we finish a book way earlier than it's, you know, we finished it last year. And then we immediately move on to other projects. Like, we're at the end of the second book of our new series right now. And the first book hasn't even been released yet. So it never really seems like it's over. And now we don't have a tour where we can, like, cry on each stop. So we might cry on your radio show.
Okay. I don't mind. I don't mind if you start sobbing away. Why not? You know, because it is a very special thing when you know, the entire, well, House of Night, and then the other world, and it's just, you've created something massive here, which of course now we know it will eventually, and once things happen again, will be on television, and I'm sure your fans will be just overwhelmed.
Oh, we're really looking forward to that. The script for the pilot is done. We were poised to have a network pick us up, and then of course the pandemic happened. But we want our fans to rest assured that our producers are wonderful. They appreciate and respect the House of Night world. They're big fans themselves. And Kristen and I are highly, highly involved in the TV series.
Oh, that's great. Well, you'll enjoy it. I worked on quite a few films, which unfortunately also went into turnaround. Well, my own film that I had written for Debbie Reynolds was scheduled to be produced. We were going to film it here in Florida in 2008, in December 2008. And of course, we had the big stock market crash in October, and all of our funding dried up. So we went into turnaround. So that's, you know, this is a problem. Sometimes you get so hyped, you get so excited, and then some natural disaster like a stock market crash or now this pandemic just sets us behind.
Yeah, but we're really looking forward to it, and we know it's going to happen. Actually, we're taking a break from the House of Night. I did leave a big door open for a spinoff of the spinoff, but we are so highly involved in the TV series that we're going to break the House of Night for a while, and we're also then working on other projects as well.
Well,
and if any House of Night readers are listening, you guys can contact whatever network you feel you would like to see the House of Night TV series on, and let them know that they should pick up the series so that when our producers are able to go back out and discuss it with those TV stations, that they'll already have a heads up and know that their watchers want this on their
I'm sure your fans will. Let's take a step back. For those people who are not familiar with your books, I'd like both of you can jump in and explain a little bit about how you created this fascinating story. And I do love how you spell vampires with a Y. That gives me a kick every time I see it. But it's a young adult fiction. When we say young adult, explain, what age are your fans starting at?
Well, for the original series, when it first released in 2007, our fans were anywhere from probably 13 on up. I was teaching high school, so all the kids were inspired by kids around me all the time. And now, though, we have the geriatric YA crowd for the House of Night fans. And they are, you know, now they're adults. And since we're a mother-daughter team, we have so many mother-daughters who have read, who are reading and continue to read the series together. And now there are, like, grandkids that are in that mix. And it's just wonderful. It's, like, multi-generational.
Okay, so who wants to explain, who wants to start and explain what more about the series and about the main characters?
Phyllis.
I was like, Kristen.
PC.
Well, the main character is Zoe Redbird, very loosely based on Kristen when she was a teenager. And I mean very loosely, because the character, Zoe takes on her own persona very quickly in the books. It's about Zoe Redbird, who gets marked to become a fledgling, which is not a fully changed vampire yet. They have 4 years for this change to happen. They're usually marked around when they're about 16 years old. And roughly, oh, probably half, maybe a little bit less, of the fledglings do not make it through the change. Their bodies reject the physiological change that happens, and they bleed out and die horribly. But Zoe does not, and she has a close pack of friends that they call the Nerd Herd that come together early in the series, and they work at defeating darkness and evil.
Well, I love when I kept reading the Nerd Herd, and nowadays with this herd, that's all we hear about, the herd, you know, and we're like, oh, I don't know, maybe we're all turning it into the Nerd Herd or something with all this pandemic stuff. It's you know, the world is a strange place right now in many ways. So having zombies, a zombie herd is like better than real life.
Well, there's an aspect of the other world that in the first couple books that actually are very zombie-like. But our Nerd Herd doesn't have that many people in it. There's only, like, there were original five and then add a couple more to them. But, and then, of course, in the other world is a mirror dimension. It's a mirror world that reflects our own. That opens up in the other world. So we get to, like, go back and see characters that had been killed off in the original series that come back in the other world series. The fans have really liked that, so.
And it takes place in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is a funny location.
Yes, for,
the other Oklahoma author I know, who's a big friend of Joy on Paper, is Carolyn Hart. And
I love Carol. I love Carolyn's books. Yes.
Oh, she's wonderful. And so she's always talking to me about Oklahoma. So I found it amusing that you set your books there.
Yeah, well, that's hometown, and I also really wanted to set the pagan matriarchal society in the middle of the Bible Belt. I knew that would be a lot of fun.
Well, it works. It certainly works. So now, when you guys started working together, was it seamless? You just sort of.
Oh no! when we started working together, we started co-authoring the House of Night series in 2005, and the first book didn't come out until 2007. And for the House of Night series, I am PC's first line editor, so she will give me an entire first draft. But in the very, very beginning, she would give me just a few chapters at a time. But when she writes, she goes back and rewrites, and that's how she gets back into her world. So she would send me three or four chapters, and I would start editing them, and then she would call me, and she would say, okay, don't read those. I've changed those, so I'm going to send you something else. And I would get the something else. And then the next day, she would call me and say, okay, don't read the end of that. I've changed that. I'm going to send you something else. And after four or five times, I was just like, you know, I can't work under these types of conditions. And which is when we decided that she would write the whole first draft and then send it to me. And, you know, it may have taken us a little bit of time to get it done, but now we've got it.
We have it big time now, yeah.
Yeah, you certainly do, because you hit the best-selling list. I don't know, how many years have you been on the New York Times best-selling list now? Three years in a row?
A lot. There are a lot, yes.
Yeah.
The House and I, yep.
Wow. So it's worked out beautifully.
Yes, it has.
It certainly has. And all from, you know, PC. You were a high school teacher, and mm-hmm. so you learned a lot from your students of what kind of thing they would like and what kind of things they would understand.
Yeah, that was. I think that's why it became so successful, because all I did was reflect what I saw around me in the series. So kids really could identify very easily with the series, and then they just grew up with it.
And you have overall themes that you want to get across, love, and what are your, you know, main themes that you really want to tell people about? It's sort of to grab them and pull them into the story about caring and about being good to each other, being open. Tell us how you've developed this sort of philosophy of your books.
Well, it's very important because I set a pagan matriarchal society in the middle of the Bible Belt. That was the vehicle I used to open the world to kids, to show that just because you're different, just because you aren't following the exact ideals of that everyone around you expects you to follow, that you should be treated with tolerance and respect and love. And that was highlighted very easily in the difference between the matriarchy and then the narrow-minded patriarchal view of the Christian Bible Belt. And so a big theme in both the original series and the Otherworld series is acceptance and tolerance. And then in the Otherworld series, I really wanted my readers to think about what happens if, because it's an alternative world, it's a mirror world to our own, so characters, the same characters are in both worlds, yet they grew up differently. They different things happened to them. So I wanted my readers to think about what would happen if you just change small things in your life, how that can be a domino effect to change the world around you.
And so let's talk, take a step back and talk about Zoe. When you developed Zoe, as you said, loosely based, but what did you want to accomplish with her?
Well, Zoe is like Kristen, of mixed heritage, of mixed race. And I wanted to in 2005, you know, it was unusual.
That was cutting edge, really.
Yeah. And when, you know, I have a lot of LGBTQ influence in the series too, and that wasn't being done in 2005. That was the big thing with Zoe, is that I wanted to reflect Kristen in the series, not exactly Kristen, like who she is, but that she is of mixed race, and I wanted that in the series, and that's why I created Zoe Redbird. And then peopled her world with, you know, diverse characters that I saw around me in class that I wasn't seeing in the YA literature at the time.
It really was I think, you know, a cutting edge, way ahead of its time, because you brought in these characters that were definitely something new in. During that period, it wasn't a popular subject, and you did a great job of bringing this in. And of course, as you said, because you had been a school teacher and you worked with diverse students, and of course in Oklahoma you have also Native Americans and you have mixed race. I thought that was a very bold move that you made at that time.
Yeah, thank you. I was hassled for it a lot back then, and I'm glad that I did it. And I liked reflecting the kids around me, which is, again, why I think it became so popular, because I did reflect what I was seeing in my classroom every day. And they, and the diverse kids were not seeing themselves in their own literature back then.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's you're a teacher. Can you imagine what it's like today to be a teacher? How terrible this is that the kids aren't going to school, and you have to do this the way they're doing it.
Yeah, it would be a struggle, but I don't think any kids need to be in a classroom during a pandemic. So, because none of them are expendable. Not one child is expendable.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I feel for the teachers today, big time.
And it's hard because one of the things that, you know, kids need, they need this interaction too, and the working with a great teacher like you were, you know, that somebody who was understanding and had an open mind, and it's very difficult, I think, for students today what they're going to go through this, you know, during this time, I really feel sorry for them because it's not going to be easy. Now, of course, one of the things I do think that they will be reading more. So, you know, might be good for you guys because I think that they do need an outlet. They need to read more. I hope, you know, that they'll find more, you know, joy in reading. And I think we did go through that Harry Potter generation where the kids learned to read long books. You know, they no longer hesitated. You know, before that, they purposely made books short, you know, to sort mm-hmm. of dumb them down. But kids are able to take in a lot. And so I think, you know, you have a big audience now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been really nice to hear, especially over the last week or so, that the same kids who aren't really kids right now have said, you know, you saved me in high school when I was going through a terrible time, and now I'm 25 and going through, you know, a pandemic, and it feels like coming home to be able to return to the house at night. So, and then, of course, we have a bunch of new readers, too, who are finding us right now and able to escape into the house at night right now, and I'm very grateful that I'm able to provide that escape.
Now, do you have a website that you want people to go to that they can find out more about you? What are you doing now for reaching out to your fans?
Both of us have websites. Kristen always is mm-hmm. better at rattling off that. Yes. Kristen takes care of that part.
PC is on Twitter and Facebook at PC Cast Author, and also at our website, pccastauthor.com. I am on Instagram at kcastauthor, and my website is kcastauthor.com. And PC is so active on her Facebook page and in different House of Night fan groups. She's really, really good about answering questions and messages. And
yeah, and there's a House of Night Facebook page, too. Look mm-hmm. for the one with a little blue check so you get the right one. Yeah, I love interacting with fans.
Well, it's important. And now, of course, with this pandemic thing, I feel so sorry for authors. Many authors, you know, have not... So they weren't prepared for this kind of thing, that they really were depending on going to, you know, events. There's no book shows. There's no place to go to promote your books now. And I know that you know, I'm sure you participated. I don't remember which events you participated in, but I'm sure you were very popular at every one that you attended.
Oh yeah, we were really looking forward to BookCon and Book Expo this year in New York, and we'll be very glad when we can go back.
Because it is difficult. It is really difficult to get out there and to. Luckily, you have built this fan base over the years, and so you immediately can, you know, just jump in and continue to communicate with them. But I think many authors have realized that, they sort of didn't plan on it. They were working on book shows and book events, and that's not going to work out for now.
That's why it's so important for authors with our platform to connect our readers with authors who were counting on, you know, the school events and the library events, the new debut authors, and also authors who aren't as well known. It's just important for all of us to band together and promote each other, because when one of us is successful, it only helps all of us.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned, and I know all your fans will want to know, so you're working on a new series, which is called?
Sisters of Salem. And the first book, Spells Trouble, releases next year. It's a twin witches trilogy.
It's hard to say, isn't it?
Twin. Yeah, that's difficult. And that's set in Salem?
It is actually set. We created our own town in Salem County. Well, we made this whole thing up. Salem County outside of Chicago. So it's set. This time it's set in Illinois, which is where PC grew up.
Yeah, until I was a young teenager. Yeah.
And then
actually, I took the little town I grew up in and fictionalized it.
It's true. And I have a book that comes out in October called The Key to Fear. And actually, I finished it more than a year ago, but it's about a society that was wiped out by a virus that was spread by touch. And they have social distancing laws in place, and they have their own little bubbles that they walk around in when they go outside. And
you wrote it before this pandemic?
Yes, I did. I turned it in last October.
And you already had the social distancing? Wow.
I have the social distancing, hands-off protocols, the whole thing. Some may call me clairvoyant.
Yeah.
What's your line? What's that line in your book, Kristen, that they keep saying, the corporation says?
No touching today for a healthy tomorrow.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, maybe you are clairvoyant. You know, sometimes these things, it's strange and magical in a way where we get these ideas from. So maybe you did live in another world,
yes.
And you came back and you brought that idea with you, and people are going to say, oh, no, why'd she do that?
And my friends keep telling me to write something positive, so this all changes.
Well, I want to thank you for being on Joyon today, and I know that Found, which is the fourth book and the last book in this series, will be very popular, and that you'll have lots of your old fans very happy and a lot of new fans out of it. So I do want to thank both of you for being on the program today. It's been a joy to talk to you.
Thank you, Patsy. We appreciate you.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
All right. Well, interesting. Zombies, and yeah. Okay. I don't know. I'm... what can I say? I have to get more involved in it, I guess. And it's, you know, I will say they are good writers. That's absolutely true. They, you know, of course, PC Cass was a 15 years. She was a English teacher, and so a high school English teacher. So she's a solid writer, and her daughter picked up after her. And that's a wonderful thing, really, about having a parent who really encourages you to write. And all of you parents out there, if you have your kids right now, my goodness gracious, they need an outlet. I would like, you know, you really to tell them, write, just start writing, whether it's just a journal or doing research, find a subject that they're interested in and have them make notes I would like to really recommend that you get this program called Scrivener. It is a wonderful writing program. It's like, instead of using Word, use Scrivener, because you can keep all of your notes there, and you can keep all of, have a list of characters. Everything is in one file, and it is so much easier than typing it in Word. And the beautiful thing about it is that you can immediately, you can write three chapters, and you can compile it into whatever you want to read it on Kindle or on your iPad. So you can see it right there. And this is a really wonderful tool to have. So the program, I think, costs $29. It's really cheap and very, very powerful. And if you're going to do, for example, in this book, I didn't ask them how they've done it, but in this series that they've written here, where they have really created worlds, two worlds, as a matter of fact, the regular world and then the other world, to keep all of this information organized and easy access. If you use this program called Scrivener, they should pay me to promote them, because I think it is the best program, especially if you have a complicated book that has a lot of different characters, or if you're doing research for a memoir, like a family kind of book, a story of your family, or a historical book, because all it's just to have everything in one file. And it's so beautifully organized and color-coded. I love things that are color-coded. I just mentally, whenever I had a job when I was young, whatever I was working at, whether I was working in the hospital sometimes or in an office or wherever, or when I started my own businesses, I color-coded everything. I had files that were a certain color, and then I could find them. And so the wonderful thing about Scrivener is that you can color code every chapter, so you know exactly which chapter you want to go to. The red chapters you want to work on, the yellow chapters are done, whatever you want. And it's so dynamic. It's such a wonderful program that after you work in that, you never want to go back to any other word processing program, because just being able to color code things. So, for example, if you've written 12 chapters and you go through them and you know that, you know, chapter 5 and chapter 7 need work, you color code them with a color that, you know, hits your eye, a yellow, and you know you have to go back to that chapter and fix something. And also, as I said, it has the feature where not only can you type in all of your research notes, you can actually take pages of research on the internet and insert them in your notes so that you have them right there, so you don't have to go back, you know, 20 times to look at an article or at a story or at some part of a book that you want to have. It's right there. And I just love this program. I was looking at it again yesterday. I was working on something, and I was just so grateful that I had it, because I hadn't looked at my work for like a couple months. I've been, overwhelmed with everything. But I went back, and everything's color-coded. And I said, oh, thank goodness. I know exactly where I have to go, which chapters I have to work in, and where my research is, because it just, I think sometimes you get so bogged down with details and having to go back and forth and find things. And the wonderful thing about it, unlike Word, which I don't know, they say that Word saves things, but I've never found anything once I've lost something on Word. But the beautiful thing about Scrivener is it saves every 30 seconds or every minute. So you never, even if your computer goes down, it crashes, you know, there's a thunderstorm and all the lights go out and everything goes down, when you reboot and load the program, the most you could have lost was 30 seconds or 60 seconds. I mean, I think you can set it. And that's all the work you've lost. it's just quite amazing. And and for anybody who has ever worked on a document, let alone a book, where you've been writing, you're writing for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, and you don't stop to save anything, and then boom. And as I said this morning, we had big electrical storm, and I thought, whoa, if the lights went out, if you don't have Scrivener, you're going to lose what you've been working on. So definitely look into that program. It's cheap. You can't get anything cheaper. It's cheaper than Word, cheaper than anything. And it's a very dynamic, aggressive, and powerful tool for an author. And talking about that, I've mentioned this before. You know, being an author is a business. Many people don't understand when they go into it. They write, and then they think that's it. And now, of course, all the authors are learning as a result of this pandemic that if they haven't developed a platform, if they haven't developed a fan base, if they haven't developed a newsletter or an email list, they're in trouble because they have no way to reach out. And although you can do it on Facebook, it's the fact is you don't really get new fans from Facebook. It's very hard to get new fans from Facebook. They come to you if they've already heard about you. So if you aren't developing your platform, which is really so often dependent upon email addresses, you are really in a mess today, because it's without having book fairs, without having book expos, without having the ability to go to a book signing, libraries, meetings, all of those places where you used to be able to pick up fans and meet people, you're in trouble. And that's why you have to treat this as a business and just grow it as a business and spend some time and money on getting a really good newsletter, for example. And then, of course, but again, the newsletter is dependent on your mailing list. So if you haven't collected a list over the years, it's pretty hard to do it now because you're not meeting people. You're just not meeting people. I know some people are doing Zoom, which is very nice, but again, it's not, you need massive amounts of people. And one of the nice things, for example, the New York Book Expo, if you would be there, if you would be meeting people in just a few days, you can meet hundreds and hundreds of people. And the nice thing of events like that is taking selfies. I've mentioned before that I had one author who took a selfie with somebody. She just didn't know who she was, but took a very nice selfie. And it turned out that the woman was a colonel in the army and was stationed in, at that time, Afghanistan. And she sent out to everybody on her mailing list this selfie. And as a result, the author got, within weeks, the author had thousands and thousands of sales of Kindle books from one selfie. And that's from one meeting at a book signing event. So again, you have to plan it. You have to work hard on trying to build this up. And it's not easy. I really feel very, very sad for so many authors out there who are sort of floundering around. And I hope that I would like, if any of you are big fans of a particular author, if you would like to be on Joy on Paper, I would like to hear from some of you fans about an author that you really know, that whose books you really, really love and would like to be a guest. And I will also invite the author to be a guest. So you and the author and me, we can all talk about their books, because authors need fans, and authors really, really appreciate fans. So if you are a particular fan of somebody, contact me. Go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper. Send me a note. And I will be happy to invite your favorite author on, and you will get a chance to be on the radio yourself. Talk about why you like a series. And one of the series I'd like to recommend, they mentioned a new series they're setting in a fictional Salem. If you want a series based in real Salem, Witch City Mysteries by Carol J. Perry is really a wonderful series, and it's one of those ones that I call binge-worthy. You can start at book one and go all the way through and not only just enjoy them, but also appreciate the development of the author as she goes through. And it's amazing to just study an author and see how they improve and how the storyline changes and all of the things that are involved. And those are Carol J. Perry's books. Another author I'd like to recommend is L.A. Chandler. I met her at BoucherCon twice. What I like about L.A. Chandler is she wears red shoes, because in the book, her character wears red shoes. So you can always find L.A. when you go to an event. Now, we're not going to any right now, but she's distinguished herself in some way, which most authors, unfortunately, don't do. They don't make that effort. And L.A. Chandler's books are all set in the 1920s, Art Deco. They're mysteries. They're wonderful, wonderful books. And she is a delightful writer, and I hope that you'll check her out, because she's binge-worthy too. And the rest is, meanwhile, I just want to, again, thank everyone for all of the messages I've been getting. I do appreciate it. Do we have time for the poem? We didn't have it ready. I don't have it ready. Okay. Did I do commercials at all? I didn't do commercials. Oh my gosh. Larson & Larson. Bill Larson is going to be on soon. If you have a question, go to my webpage. And also, I want to thank again Glenn Erickson for so much, for being just such a wonderful friend to Joy on Paper. And get his book, Android Love. It's a great book. I love it. And meanwhile, remember what I always tell you, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or hear them spoken on an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you start writing. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. Everything is clean and spotless here, and I feel really great being back here behind the microphone here at 10 Talk Radio Network. Thanks, Ed. Everybody, be kind to each other. Bye-bye.